Welcome to Cooler Than Homework, a Disney Channel original movie podcast. I'm Nicole Sweeney, and a trophy that I won as a kid was first place in emerging business issues.
That sounds fake. I'm Matthew Gatos, and I had many trophies as a kid, but one of the ones that I had proudly displayed in my bedroom was a bowling trophy for my high game, which I mentioned already in the Alley Catch Strike episode. But I won't let you forget that I was a good bowler.
My name is Lenny-ness, and I had a trophy for first place in the literary fair. But, like, so our teachers submitted on our behalfs, and she submitted my essay about what I did over the summer, but I lied on it, so it was first place for a lie. I went to New Jersey. I saw fireworks. Made it up.
That was your lie?
I don't know. New Jersey was where I was born. It was like in the second grade. I don't know.
That's like pretty imaginative for a second grader, though. Like, where is not here? New Jersey.
No one's going to call me out on that. It's not like Fiji or something.
Right.
And I'm Sari Riley, and a trophy I won as a kid was third place in senior group performance in National History Day, where me and my friend did a 10-minute play about clocks and the marine chronometer specifically, and we got third place for it, and we were very proud.
Amazing. This week we are talking about Miracle in Lane 2, which was not about a Paralympic runner, but I feel like Sari was in the neighborhood. But what actually happened in this movie?
Miracle in Lane 2 is based on the true story of Justin Yoder. So Justin is born with spina bifida and uses a wheelchair. His mother is very overprotective. His father works a lot and also kind of avoids his complicated emotions. And his big brother Seth is good at lots of sports, but also struggles with complicated emotions. Justin is slightly obsessed with winning a trophy, hence our introductions. We're really good at this. he wants to be good at something in the way that he's watched his brother be good at things for forever. And he talks to God about this. And God is a famous race car driver. This is a point that is both relevant and irrelevant to this movie. So first, Justin tries to pitch joining a baseball league, but blows his chance at that when he throws up all over the coach that didn't want him on the team in the first place. Then he helps his crotchety old neighbor win a car show. So the neighbor has a really cool car, but nobody is voting for him because he's mean, I guess. He's never really shown as being like particularly mean, if you ask me, but I don't know if that really says that I'm mean. I don't know. He seemed fine.
Definitely spend a lot more time talking about how he's mean than actually having him demonstrate mean behavior.
At all. Like, once he yelled because somebody threw, like, a ball in the street and he was like, you're going to kill someone. I was like, legit, you could. That is not mean. But okay. For his help, Justin demands that the car show trophy be inscribed with his name. And he waits very impatiently for the trophy to arrive, eventually breaking into the neighbor Vic's garage to see if the trophy is there and crashing a bunch of stuff and causing damage to Vic's cool car. His punishment is to spend some days at Vic's helping him with chores and stuff like that. Vic tells him to stay out of his shed, but Justin literally cannot. He cannot stay out. So he goes in there and sees a bunch of trophies, his kryptonite, and a soapbox car, and a projector with some old movies, and it features Vic and a wife and a cute daughter. Vic catches Justin in there and tells him to get the heck out. That night, Justin pitches racing soapbox derby to his parents, and they are all surprisingly chill and very accepting of it. Justin apologizes to Vic and eventually gets him in on teaching them the soapbox ropes and building a car. Justin's dad and Vic invent a handbrake or come up with a handbrake for Justin to accommodate his disability. Everyone is having a great time except for Seth, who feels overlooked and, like his parents, particularly his father, is giving more time and attention to Justin. On his first test run, Justin crashes because some wires in the car are are crossed. Justin thinks Seth sabotaged him, and they fight and say mean things to each other about their physical and mental health, respectively. Justin keeps racing, and he gets better and better at it. In his last race to qualify for the finals, he ignores a headache and races, but crashes right before the end when he loses consciousness. He has emergency surgery to replace a failing shunt in his brain, but ultimately recovers. Meanwhile, another driver has dropped out of the finals, so Justin gets another chance to drive. Seth cannot believe that they're going to let him after he crashed and has a very emotional moment about how he is scared that Justin is going to die. In the finals, one of the competitors tries to get him disqualified because he's using that special handbrake, but Seth comes to the rescue, having called the media in order to shame the governing soapbox body into allowing it. Seth also gives Justin a pep talk, calling him a hero all right. And Justin wins. He visits Mechanic God one more time and asks if everyone is perfect when they get to heaven. So Mechanic God shows him a heaven where people are all zipping around in wheelchairs. Perfect, Justin says. The end.
Matt, where is the cast of Miracle in Lane 2 now?
So I'm going to try not to make this super long, so I'm going to cut out some people from this cast, because it turns out a lot of people in this film have gone on to do a lot of stuff. So I'm definitely not going to include everyone, and some people I'm going to just like brush over pretty quickly. So apologies if you're a big Roger Aaron Brown fan, because I don't have much to say about him. But here we go. First up, we have what I'm going to call Parks and Rec Corner of this episode, because there's like four people in this movie, or three or four, who are also in episodes of Parks and Rec. We have Judith Drake, who plays a volunteer, like sign up volunteer at one of the races, plays Connie Cabbage on Parks and Rec. The soccer coach in this movie plays Dr. Lip Nerpins on Parks and Rec. Jim Jansen, who plays a minister in this movie, also plays the same role pretty much, a minister on Gilmore Girls, was also in an episode of Parks and Rec. And then last but certainly not least, we have Tuck Watkins, who plays both God and Bobby Wade in this movie. That's the race car God that Mario was alluding to earlier. Since being in Miracle in Lane 2, he has gone on to be in Desperate Housewives, Bob's Burgers, and Parks and Rec, where he played Pistol Pete, the former basketball star who attempts to dunk a basketball on an ice rink, and it does not go well. Currently, he's still acting and stuff, but obviously... I'm more enthralled with people's personal lives and their Instagrams, usually. Tuck is currently dating Broadway actor Andrew Rannells, who was in Book of Mormon and a bunch of stuff. And they just have real cute couple Instagram goals going on. So check those two out.
This must be where I know him from, because I've seen Parks and Rec, but I'm like, I know this man for some reason. And I think it's from Andrew Rannells' Instagram.
Oh, I love that.
They seem to be a somewhat recent couple, like in the past year or so, but they do post a lot of pictures, a lot of them shirtless together.
Mm-hmm. And they have children together, right?
Yeah, I think they're Tuck's kids, and then they're sort of like all taking care of them now. I'm not sure the breakdown of all of that.
Mm-hmm. I've seen pictures of them with children around. Yeah. Okay.
Good dads all around, probably. Who really knows? Mm-hmm. Next up, we've got Joel McKinnon Miller, who we've talked about before. He plays Bill in this, which is one of the competing dads. And we talked about him before because he was also in the 13th year. And also, he plays Scully on Brooklyn Nine-Nine. But it was nice to see him in this one because the 13th year, I think he had like one line. So he gets a bigger role in Miracle in Lane 2.
Comparatively. But...
yes, comparatively only. As I mentioned up top, Roger Aaron Brown, who plays Vic in this, big role in this movie, hasn't done a ton since this movie. He's still acting in some things, but not a ton, or at least not things that I recognized at all. Then we have Patrick Levi's something like that, who plays Seth Yoder, the big brother. We talked about him before as well because he was also in Brink. He played one of the friends on the rollerblading crew. But he's still living the family man life that we talked about last time. And he also is still doing his Christian rock pop music. And his newest album is called Extravagant God. And it doesn't seem to be on your standard music streaming platforms, but it is on Bandcamp if you'd like to check that out.
These are hard times. People might want to.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Bandcamp is currently, or was yesterday at least, when as of recording this, like was waiving all of their fees so that artists were getting 100% of the money that you were paying for music. So, you know, if you're looking to buy some Christian rock pop from the guy from Brink, now is the time.
Please, the guy from Brink and Miracle in Lane 2. Don't
yes,
tell
sorry.
His career short.
Yes. To be fair, he does have a much like bigger, like better role in this movie than he did in Brink. In Brink, he was just the come on, Brink guy. And in this one, he has like an emotional arc. Mm-hmm. Next, we have Molly Hagen, who plays Sheila. Whoa, that's a word I don't say often, apparently. Next, we have Molly Hagen, who plays Sheila. It's spelled in a way that I have never said. I'm just going to power through this. Sheila. Yes. Yoder. Mom. That's what I have in my notes. Sheila Yoder. Mom. That's her. You may be familiar with her from Star Trek or the movie Election with Matthew Broderick. We will see her in another DCOM in the future, but she's also recently been on the show iZombie, Jane the Virgin, The Orville, and is going to be in that new Walker Texas Rangers show that is happening for some reason. Another one that we don't have a lot to say about, but we're going to mention real quick because it would be weird if we didn't, is the dad, played by Rick Rosevic. The character's name is Myron Yoder, which I don't even know if they say. I feel like I would have remembered the name Myron coming up, but I who knows? He plays dad, but he was in things like Top Gun and The Terminator. But since being in Miracle in Lane 2, has only been in a number of things and seems to maybe not really be acting much anymore. And then we have the star of the show, the most recognizable face, at least to me, Frankie Muniz, playing Justin Yoder. I was curious about Frankie Muniz and if he was familiar to you, Sari.
I did recognize his face, sort of, but I couldn't place it. And then Sylvia walked downstairs and was like, oh, Malcolm in the Middle. And I was like, oh, yes, I've seen a commercial for that.
I've seen a commercial for that.
But yes, he was Malcolm on Malcolm in the Middle, the titular Malcolm. He was also Agent Cody Banks in those films, which I think there's more than one. And this, I feel like Frankie Muniz just kind of lived a life that every little boy says they want to live. Because he was an actor and then decided, you know what, I'm kind of done with acting. I'm going to go be a race car driver for a while. So he went and did that. And then after that, he became a drummer in a couple of bands, just did that for a while, too. Now, this is the part where maybe he diverges a bit from what every little boy wants. He now owns a store called Outrageous Olive Oils and Vinegars in Old Town Scottsdale, Arizona.
Amazing.
I don't know what you're talking about, Matt. That is every little boy's dream. They want to be a firefighter, a policeman, or a connoisseur of olive oils and vinegars.
Outrageous olive oils and vinegars.
Excuse me.
The only way it could be more perfect were if it was called Extreme Olive Oil.
That was probably already taken.
But yes, he co-owns that with his recently married to wife. They just got married on February 21st. Congrats. And his most recent acting gig, and a lot of his more recent acting gigs, seem to be voicing or playing Frankie Muniz in other things.
Yes.
Most recently, he voiced Frankie Muniz in an episode of that new R-rated animated Harley Quinn show where Harley Quinn like talks about having a crush on him when he was a little boy. And yeah, he seems like he's living the good life with his olive oil store, and he seems to really like his life in Arizona. So good job, Frankie Muniz. You won.
First things first, Miracle in Lane 2 nostalgia check. Do you remember watching this movie prior to watching it for this podcast?
Nope.
Yes, I did.
I feel so sure that I've seen it, but none of this was familiar to me.
No, I was still convinced that I was right and was waiting for him to go to a track, and then realized with 20 minutes left, I was like, no, this movie is just soapboxers scene.
You held out hope for a long time.
Yeah,
I know. I think somehow, like with the pandemic and everything, my brain just broke and I was like convinced that I was right in a way that I haven't been for any of the other DCOMs. So,
All right. So did you guys like this movie?
I did. I don't know. It's a weird one for me because I felt like it was based on a true story, which I kind of knew going in. So I think that, much like The Color of Friendship, gives it like a little bit of extra weight. Like, they don't have to fill in the gaps with fake stuff as much, so they have enough real stuff to pull from. And I think it just kind of fleshes it out a bit more than other DCOMs. It's not my favorite. It's probably in like the upper half of my favorites on the list, but I don't know. I enjoyed it. It's also been a few weeks since I watched it, and a lot has happened in the world since then, so maybe it's rose-colored glasses that I'm looking at it, but I thought it was pretty fun.
I agree with that. I also put it, I think I put it right below Rip Girls and right above Halloween Town. It's number 8 in my list right now. And yeah, it was like middling in that it just wasn't my favorite. It didn't get the biggest laughs from me. It won't be the most memorable one, but as far as a DCOM goes, I was really invested in the characters and I wanted them to succeed. And when like the brothers were fighting and being brothers and really digging into physical and mental health, I was like, that hurts. And so I thought that maybe because it was based on a real story, like you said, Matt, it hit a little bit more seriously than other DCOMs. And so I had more feelings afterward.
Yeah, I don't know how much of it is just like, I don't know, we're all in quarantine right now. And so I cried every day anyway. So like, I watched this movie and I cried. And I think like probably I'm like, that's just going to be how it goes from here on out. if we keep making this podcast while we are all in isolation, I'm probably going to cry at every movie, whether I like it or not. But I cried when he crashed and his brother, who was like, you know, the last thing he had said to him was like, I hope you die. And then his brother crashes and he's like, oh my god, I'm like very upset. I don't know, I I was emotional. I agree more broadly with everything you guys have said. I feel like I generally liked this movie. It was not one of my favorites, but overall I had a surprisingly good time. I enjoyed the bits of it that were silly. The like race car driver god is so ridiculous, and I like, I don't know, it was funny. I found it really funny, and I also feel like I understand why a kid would particularly enjoy this movie. And so just all around, I don't know, I had a good time.
I feel like such a dick right now. It's not that I didn't like it. It's not a bad movie. I mean, everything together, I built it up in my head to, like, I remember watching this as a kid and I feel like I either didn't like it or didn't have feelings about it. So I kind of like built up the dread of watching it again, which was one thing. And then the pandemic hit. And then like it is very much almost in its own like DCOM category. Like I feel like it belongs with The Color of Friendship as like a based on true events, like a deeper, more serious thing. But compared to The Color of Friendship, like this is not as good. So the story was good and the emotional beats. Yes, I also cried either about quarantine or about sibling feels. I don't know. But there was like a lot of details around it that just weren't like my jam, that I was like, why is this happening? The car mechanic was one of those things in the beginning when Justin is making like really bad choices and I don't know, destroying stuff and sneaking into places, I was just very uncomfortable the whole time. So that's not fun for me. It was fine. I put it also in the middle of the pack, but like lower middle, like right before the tier of really bad DCOMs is where I would put this.
The more we talked about it, It started like working its way up my list more.
Oh no.
Like I kept, like especially hearing Nicole and Sari like talk about it more, I was like, yeah, you know what, I'll bump it up one. And then like Nicole, you kept talking and I was like, it's going up another one. I kept like moving it up and up my list a little bit, so it currently sits at number 6 on my list. Wow. Just outside of like that like unbreakable, I feel like there's like an unbreakable top 5 on my list currently that's going to be hard to break into. But everything in the middle after that is kind of a wash where it's like, yeah, I enjoyed the 13th year. Did I enjoy Miracle in Lane 2 better? I guess. Maybe. Eh? It's been a long time since I watched the 13th year.
Yeah. We're like a recent bias.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. For sure. And I think I definitely was uncomfortable when he was breaking into the shed and trashing the car, because it's a lot of those just like, why don't do that? Why? It's the worst decision you could possibly make right now. But I agree with the thing of like the brother relationship had a little bit more weight to it than even I thought it was going to at the beginning of the movie, where I was like, okay, he's got like a bully older brother. But then it was like, oh, the brother's dealing with some shit too. So that's interesting. You gave him a character.
Yeah, I agree. My main criticism is definitely the character, or like how the story handled Vic, where they had to introduce him as someone that was sort of an outcast in the neighborhood, but I did not buy that he was the mean old man. He was so nice. He gave cookies. He's just doing his own thing. So I agree wholeheartedly with you, Mari, during your summary, where it's like, if he's mean, then I'm also mean, because I would also get mad if a kid broke my nice car, like broke into my house, broke my nice car, and then, yeah, would make him work or do something for me, because... yeah, that sucks. That's hundreds of dollars worth of damage.
I by no means think that the movie did this on purpose at all, but by making him like the mean old man, but not making him mean, and then making him like the big black guy, I was like, what is happening? While I was watching it. So that also made me pretty uncomfortable with the whole thing with Vic. It goes away quickly because, you know, they introduce him as part of Justin's story and he is really nice and gives him stale cookies and shit. And so you're like, aw. But at the very beginning, I was like, why are they doing this? And I think the answer is that even just like with Justin going to the car mechanic for the first time, I think that those little interjections and having him like really imagine like that worked better here than like, say, the interjections in Alley Cat Strike or whatever. But the first portion of the movie, I think, was a little uncomfortable in how it was introducing all of these pieces. So it took me a while where I was like, OK, I get what the movie is doing.
Yeah. And I agree that like he also lives in this town where lots of people know old Vic and they know his life story. Mm-hmm. So they know the terrible things he's been through in fairly recent memory. So I think they should be excusing his behavior a little bit of like, yeah, old Vic, yeah, he acts a little rough sometimes, but he's been through some shit. So let him go through it.
Yeah, it was weird too, because there's that one bit where the parents are like, oh, we can do something nice for him, you know, while we're like helping you do this. And that sounds great and yada, yada, yada. And it makes me wonder, like, why none of the adults, like, I understand that maybe the children won't remember what Vic went through, but like, why? Yeah. Why are the parents letting the children believe that this man is like so mean and whatever? I don't know. It seemed very weird.
You expect it to be that thing where it's like the mean guy in the neighborhood and you're like, mister, why are you so mean? And he's like, I just don't like people. But this guy's like, no, I lost my daughter and within a year my wife died. And you're like, damn. I get all that, Vic.
This is making me like weirdly like, I think this is again the self-isolation talking more than anything, that it gave me a screenplay idea about a gruff neighbor, because I'm looking at this of like, there's so many movies that have this stereotype of the gruff neighbor who is really mean and everyone fears him. We've got The Sandlot, we've got this, we've got many examples. But a screenplay or a story where the kid has seen all of those movies, and so he thinks his neighbor really has a heart of gold, but the neighbor's actually just a dick.
He went through the pandemic of 2019, 2020, and just forgot how to interact with people, hates them now.
Yeah. Thinks every kid is a carrier of disease.
Amazing. I took one impossibly petty note. This is like the truly the most ridiculous thing to complain about. It didn't make me mad so much as it made me burst out laughing. I saw them driving, and some of this is like, I don't pay super close attention when we're watching these movies because I don't know, because of what they are. Okay.
The truth comes out.
Nicole hates DCOMs.
So I when they were on the freeway in Vic's convertible driving, I had this moment of like, oh, is this movie set in Southern California? And I just didn't realize it. And then they pass a sign that says Akron, Ohio. Yeah. And I just could not stop laughing about how not in Ohio that freeway is.
They were like on the 101 for sure. I was watching that and like out loud while they were driving. I was like, well, they're definitely not in Southern California.
I love the idea that they're in their like middle of nowhere town in Ohio driving on this like 8-lane highway to Akron. Everything about it was delightful. And made no sense, and I appreciated it.
That just reminds me of, there's a line in Austin Powers 2 where they're driving around in quote-unquote England, and Austin Powers says out loud, you know what's remarkable is how much England looks in no way like Southern California.
To take a hard left turn from that, the one note that I took with 4 exclamation points, I wanted to hear about the dad's fruit fly genetic code. Because there was one scene when they're dinner, and I think it was right before Justin was going to ask about the soapbox derby, and his older brother was like trying to distract in any way. I had no idea what the dad was doing. I was not paying close enough attention to realize what the dad's job was. I thought he was a painter, but turns out he was like a biology professor. And then he was like, tell me about what you're going to do in the lab, dad. And I was really excited to hear that. And then they cut it off with the soapbox racing, and I was very disappointed.
I mean, I bet based on the history of these movies talking about science that you would have been very disappointed if he had actually said the line. So, like, I think it was, I think it was for the best.
It would have been like, well, son, the Krebs cycle.
That's true. It needs to leave me wanting more.
Something else that made me like genuinely burst out laughing, but this was with actual joy, and like, I don't know, it like, it's, this was not a like shocking sort of turn. I was very delighted when the older brother brought all of the media into the deliberation. I don't know why I found this so charming, but I was like, yes, bring in all of the media. You will shame them. And I appreciated that was like his big coup de grace in this movie.
I think it was super hilarious because what you expect is that there's going to be some sort of rousing speech and everybody will have a change of heart. But it's like, no, we did that. Bring the media to shame them.
To shame you.
Like, oh my god, that's too real. I love it. It was a really great twist.
It works so well too.
So after all of this, like, I was looking at my list again, like, come on, Maddie, just, you know, maybe it's higher, maybe it is better, but I can't move it up from where it is. I think I have the opposite problem of like what Matt is experiencing, is that the further I get away from some of these middle movies, like, I forget what was bad about them, and I'm just like, that silly movie where that 13-year-old turned into a mermaid, amazing. And so, like this one, all the bad stuff is fresh in my head. Maybe in a few weeks I'll be like, the media and the mechanic god, but right now I have to leave it where it is. It was fine. I just not my favorite.
That's interesting, because I look back at the list and with my horrible memory, I'm like, don't look under the bed. What was under the bed? I don't know anymore. So it's just there.
Yeah, that is one that keeps creeping down the list for me. I keep thinking about that movie more and I'm like, should it be lower? I don't remember a whole lot about it.
Yeah, I don't remember anything. I could not tell you a single plot point from that movie, and I'm going to leave it that way because I think this is great.
I have a terrible memory as well. So I'm like, why do I remember so much about these movies? Well, one, I've seen all of these movies more than one time.
Right.
And two, I transcribe all of the podcasts. So I feel like the podcasts also live like very deeply in my brain. And I'm like, how do you not remember? She kissed her imaginary friend. Oh, man, this weird thing we're doing. We're doing a pretty weird thing, just so you guys know.
Yeah, I love it. It's the only thing, one of the only things keeping me sane right now. The idea that I get to talk to you and do this really weird thing.
This week's group discussion topic is sibling rivalries. I think we didn't actually clarify this beforehand, but we're talking about sibling rivalries in media. Yes, not like our own sibling rivalries or our... Well, you know, I'm just going to say it's sibling rivalries and Matt.
Wow. Okay. I'm ready. Come on, bring it. I'm ready. Let's do this.
Yeah. Historical sibling rivalries. Just really like take us wherever you want and we'll have to follow.
All right. So there's a guy named Cain. There's a guy named Abel. Let's do this. That's as much as I know about Cain and Abel right there, by the way.
You got a guy named Cain, you got a guy named Abel. That's the story.
That's all I know. So yes, I'll start. To be fair, I was fully prepared to talk about either, so I had to set my train on the right track there to be like, okay, we're talking fictional. Got it. Going. Personally, I think one of my favorite sibling rivalries that kind of is like a long-term one and an ongoing, like, I don't know, it's like ebbs and flows of like, it's a rivalry, it's a close friendship, it's a brotherhood, it's whatever, is Corey and Eric Matthews on Boy Meets World. Because I think, one, that show was on for a long time, and so you saw them go from like junior high all the way through college, and then on Girl Meets World, they're adults with kids and all this stuff. So you get to see like a full like relationship happen there. And in the beginning, it's really about this like punk kid with his high school cool, more attractive brother who gets all the girls. And there's like a very clear kind of trope-ish dynamic there that starts to change as the show goes on, and like they deal with issues of like, who's the parents' favorite, or no, you've always been smarter than I have, and all that stuff. And I think it just represents like a really well done sort of TV realistic version of a brotherhood. I am also a huge Boy Meets World fan, so I think that also sticks with me as something I've watched a lot. So I'm like familiar with all the intricacies of all the relationships on that show. But that's just one that, like, when we started talking about the idea of sibling rivalries, was the first one that jumped out at me.
You've also mentioned it in other group discussion topics on this podcast too. So I appreciate a strong brand.
Oh yeah. They're like four things that if you start me talking about them, I won't stop. It's like Boy Meets World, Star Wars, Full House, and Roseanne. Those are the four things. If you get me talking about any of those, I could do an entire podcast by myself, no guests, about any of those four things.
In, I guess, contrast to that, but also something that I've talked about on this podcast before, probably because I like it a lot, in The Good Place, a sibling rivalry that sticks out is Tahani and Camilla. Tahani Aljamil is one of the four main characters, five-ish main characters of the series, one of the four who dies and then gets put in the good place, which is actually the bad place. Spoilers if you haven't listened to season one or listened to watched season one, which is what we do
with TV.
Yeah. Nothing matters anymore. We imbibe media and then we make more. But it is such an exaggerated sibling rivalry where Tahani name drops all these celebrities and Camilla is her even more perfect sister who's like an Olympian and a famous artist, and people will faint when she makes them omelets because it's so luxurious. And I thought it was just like a really interesting dynamic to introduce because Tahani had such a complicated relationship with her family. And so seeing her relationship with her sister progress from this one-sided sort of rivalry where Tahani was jealous of Camilla and it was presented as such, to them growing to understand each other and realize that their parents pit them against each other, and to, I don't know, rebuild their sisterhood with time and understanding and the loops of time that The Good Place allowed for, was just like a really lovely and beautiful plot point. A lot of things in that show made me cry, but that was one of them, was like seeing how her story with her sister wrapped up.
That was literally the one I was going to mention, because
oh no,
I just, no, it's okay. I just spent the last 3 days binging all 4 seasons of The Good Place.
Congrats. Good job.
Thank you. I had watched the first 2, so I rewatched those and then I finished it off. So it was fresh in my memory. And I think the thing that I really like about that sibling rivalry is that it is very exaggerated. But also, like, even as Tani starts trying to, like, rebuild it, it's not that easy. But you see her really trying and being like, I'm sorry, grudgingly, but her sister's still like, no. All of the complicated ways that it shows that people are complex, and, you know, there's not really one, like, good or bad thing, like, there's layers to it all, is really cool. So seeing that relationship reflect it was great. But if I'm gonna not only just piggyback on your answer, and I will also mention something I've already mentioned on this podcast, and that's the Chronicles of Narnia. So there's 4 siblings in that one, and in the first one they go into Narnia and Edmund sells them all out to the evil witch for some pastries. And so he also, like, doesn't believe his little sister at first when she's like, I got into a magical world. Or, well, he does, but when he's confronted by the older siblings, he sells her out and lies about it. So she's, like, really pissed at him. And then it's not until, like, you know, the Jesus character Aslan comes and is like, we gotta fix this relationship, that things really start getting back together. But it was just, it's like, I don't know, super petty, but also you understand, because the older sibling, younger sibling dynamic is really tricky to navigate. And then they all end up being kings and queens. So it works out. It's fine.
So when we started talking about this, I, like, had an immediate, like, thing that came to mind that is not a real answer, that is not my real answer, rather. I guess it could be someone's real answer. But it's like one of those things where, like, once it's in your head, you can't shake it. I have a real answer. But first, I, in quarantine, have started watching Rain, which is bad. It's a bad show. To be clear, I'm not going to try to argue that the show is good. Uh-huh. It's just, like, deeply angsty and nobody uses their words, and that's, like, the whole thing. But there is a, like, brotherly rivalry at the beginning of that show, or I guess throughout. So there's, like, the prince, and then there's, like, his, like, bastard brother. And they both love the same girl and whatever. So that, like, I could not, I was, like, trying. I was like, get out of my head. My, like, actual top of mind sort of answer is 10 Things I Hate About You, which I have definitely mentioned on this podcast before, as well, continuing with that theme. But the Kat and Bianca relationship, I really, really love. Like, I love the whole dynamic of, like, they're just very, very different people. And Kat kind of is that way because she's, like, trying to protect her sister, but also she's, like, a teenager herself, and so her way of doing that is maybe not the best or the smartest. And, you know, Bianca is, like, mad at her sister, but when push comes to shove, you know, she is more than happy to punch a guy in the face for her sister. And I don't know, I love them. My other, like, honorable mention, I guess, is Ever After, which has sort of, has kind of the, like, I don't know, biological sibling rivalry between Jacqueline and Marguerite, who are sort of the evil stepsister characters in this Cinderella story. And then Danielle, who is the Cinderella character. Really, Marguerite is the only one who's actually evil, but that whole sibling dynamic playing out in the incredibly tropey sort of fairy tale way that it does, it has been a favorite of mine since I was, like, 9 years old, so I have to mention it. And with that, it is now time for us to discuss the lessons that we learned from Miracle in Lane 2.
I learned that God is whoever you imagine them to be, and then sometimes they appear in real life to you, and then on national TV.
I learned that if you're looking for a new hobby, try breaking into your neighbor's shed and seeing what they've been up to.
I learned that this is not my favorite version of God, so I'm just going to forget it. I'm going to delete it.
I learned that sometimes you can't because you can't, and that's just the way life is.
Wow.
This is what you're stomping around your house, saying to yourself, wanting to go socialize with friends.
You can't because you can. That's just the way life is. And now, to close out this podcast, it is time for Sari to guess the plot of the next movie. Next time on Cooler Than Homework, we are watching Stepsister from Planet Weird.
I'm going to go with my gut, you know? So, Stepsister from Planet Weird sounds so exaggerated that it has to be about actual aliens, because it wouldn't just be Planet Weird if it was still about Earth. Earth is weird, but it's not Planet Weird. So it's about maybe a young boy named Mikey who has always just been like a real boy's boy. you know the saying, boys will be boys. He's like that kind of annoying tyke or teen, I guess. Every Disney Channel movie star is a teen. And he is like mean to girls, maybe, like kind of just gross and weird and into eating worms in front of them or whatever teenagers do, and is convinced that all girls have cooties. And then his mom marries a man who is like kind of weird. Maybe he's an accountant, but he like is always wearing a suit and is always carrying a briefcase, even in the house, which is just like very alien to me. And that businessman has a daughter who is also into like very weird, like eats worms for fun because she's actually an alien. And so the stepsister is from Planet Weird. And then maybe this Mikey has to go, like she's having trouble adjusting to Earth, but then gets like a radio comms from her mom, I guess. So like her mom and dad alien divorced, and then her dad ran all the way to Earth and brought her with her. And so like on alternate weekends or months or whatever, she gets passed back and forth. And so one time Mikey hitches a ride with her back to Planet Weird. And I don't know, tagline?
I have not been able to find a tagline.
Oh, okay, that's fine. I'll just finish it then. Then so he goes back to Planet Weird and he meets his stepsister's mom, who's like also who's just so kind but also extremely weird, and he like doesn't want to eat worms for his full meal, and then realizes that being human isn't so bad after all, but also now loves being the stepbrother of this alien family. That's it. Like that's just his life now, is that he is now a cooler kid on Earth because he understands how to interact with Earth people, but then also now has alien friends on the alien planet with his alien stepsister on Planet Weird. The end.
Sari, that was amazing. That was really beautiful. And unassisted. Tune in next time to find out if that is at all correct. If you are enjoying this podcast, please tell your friends, rate and review it, all that stuff. We would love to hear all of your thoughts about Miracle in Lane 2 and this podcast. There will be a post dedicated to this episode, or you can find us on Twitter at DCOM Squad. I am at Sweeney Says.
I am at Matthew Gatos.
You can find me at My Name is Muddiness.
And I'm at C.E. Riley.
This podcast is a Snark Squad production, edited by me, transcribed by Mari, and our theme music is by Stefan Chin.